Today, the migration question amplified but not tackled by anyone. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, with the latest post covering finance and property news. Well, last week, Michelle Bullock, the RBA governor, was asked a really good question about high migration might impact inflation.
Chris Reason from Channel 7. You mentioned there any drivers for the key drivers for inflation, tight jobs, petrol, services, industries, etc. You just mentioned there as well population. Can I ask you about the impact of immigration? Where do you stand on that? I know that last year in November you said you welcomed it. Immigration was a good thing for Australia. Do you still stand by that, given the sticky nature of the inflation figures now and the impact it is having on the economy?
So a couple of points. Immigration broadly over the long sweep of history, I think, has been positive for Australia. What we've observed, though, with the pandemic is that immigration has had really big swings. We had the borders closed, we had no immigration, and then the borders opened and then we had a massive increase in immigration. My understanding, and I think this goes into our forecasts, is that the government is looking to put immigration on a much more steady footing going forward rather than these big swings which we've seen. But we've been through, you know, once in a 100-year shock through the pandemic. On the impact in inflation, it's not actually that straightforward because, yes, they add to, new migrants add to demand and there's been that element of it. They've certainly added to pressure on the housing market, we know that. But on the other hand, they've added to labour supply. And one of the biggest complaints that I used to hear from businesses during the pandemic and during the border closures was they couldn't get people, they couldn't get staff. And even as we were coming out of those circumstances, you'll remember the labour market was so tight, businesses just could not get workers. So they've added to the supply side of the economy as well. So I think our judgment is that on balance, it really hasn't added dramatically to inflation, with the exception that it's put big pressure on the housing market, and that's obviously working its way out in rents, and that's the one bit where it's... But otherwise, I think it's been pretty much a muchness.
But her answer was, well, weird, as she tried to trade off pressures on the housing market from higher demand-driven rent rises against the supply of more workers to meet business demand, and implicitly increasing economic activity. Treasurer Jim Chalmers, speaking at the National Press Club on Wednesday, explained that Tuesday's budget forecast of headline CPI inflation falling to 2.75% by the end of the financial year 24-25, by the way, not January 1, as I noted some reporting claimed, was predicated at least in part by the government cutting net overseas migration. We're seeing a substantial moderation in inflation in the forecasts and in the last couple of years as well, and that is largely because of how we're managing the budget, but it will also be increasingly about how we're managing the population as well, Chalmers said. Right. So, it must also be true that if lower migration will ease inflation, then higher migration will drive inflation higher. And you can see this from the most transparent indicator, the CPI rent inflation, which is still bubbling around 8% after Commonwealth rent assistance is included. And of course, the higher inflation read has directly led to the RBA lifting the cash rate, which in turn spills over to mortgage rates. And we see that because of the large variable rate loan mix we have in Australia, the impact on households is massive. We can see this in the way mortgage rates have moved, and how in Australia the swing up is greater than in most other comparable countries. And this, of course, is also picked up in our mortgage stress modelling, as we've discussed in our recent live show, where both mortgage stress at more than half of all households borrowing and rental stress at three quarters of renters are extreme as we've seen it. No surprise that some households now are paring back on their spending, mortgage delinquency is on the rise, and growth is expected to slow ahead. The housing crisis is indeed deep, with many young and not so young Australians unable to get into the market because of the cost and shortage of properties. There's a separate but related crisis in the rental market. And in fact, there are too many people for too few homes. The government has a raft of policies to try to deal with this, but it won't meet its own target of 1.2 million new homes over 5 years. Which brings us straight back to migration. Migration, of course, has always been a political campaign football. Recall that prior to the last election, Albo said there should be a focus on training local Australians as opposed to migrants. And he said he would not back the then government's plan to take 160,000 new migrants each year. 160,000, by the way, would be the normal level of migration between 1950 and 2005. Instead, of course, the number of new arrivals went through the roof, well ahead of the 260,000 projected in the out years of last year's budget, which, by the way, seems to be the current out year baseline too, but we'll come on to that shortly. In the past 2 years, we've seen perhaps a million people arriving, and the population overall has expanded to 27 million and counting. In fact, last year's federal budget forecast 400,000 net overseas migrants for 2022-23. The actual official figure came in at 528,500 for the same year. The budget did make some vague statements about trimming student intake and other measures to change the migration mix. The government is reforming Australia's migration system to drive greater economic prosperity and to restore its integrity, implementing actions outlined in the migration strategy. This budget supports skills in demand, with around 70% of the permanent migration program allocated to skilled visa categories. The government will also introduce a new national innovation visa to attract exceptionally talented migrants and replace the global talent visa and the business innovation and investment visa. The latest forward projections contained in the budget papers suggest the government's actions are estimated to reduce net overseas migration by 110,000 people over the forward estimates from 1 July 2024. Net overseas migration is forecast to approximately halve, from 528,000 in 22-23 to 260,000 in 24-25, with 395,000 in the middle of the two. Based on past history, that 395,000 net overseas migration forecast for this financial year has little chance of coming to fruition. In fact, Australia's net overseas migration was officially 145,200 in the third quarter of 2023, which is the latest official data. That leaves only 250,000 available for the final three quarters of the year to hit the budget's 395,000 projection. And we've already seen that the stock of temporary visas excluding visitors in Australia hit a record high of 2.4 million in March 2024, up 309,445 year on year. And on Tuesday, the ABS released the net permanent and long-term arrivals data for March, which jumped by a record 195,000 over the first quarter of 2024. So it is very likely that we're going to land closer to 500,000 by the end of the year. In other words, the talk in the budget on migration is just that, unannounceable. And then we got opposition leader Peter Dutton's policy as part of his budget response.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Tonight I want to outline part of my vision for Australia to get our country back on track, to keep our nation safe and secure, to make life easier and better for all Australians, because this Labor government has made life so much tougher for Australians, because this Labor government has set our country on a very dangerous course. Almost 2 years ago, Prime Minister Albanese was elected promising a reduction of $275 each year in your power prices, cheaper mortgages, and that you would be better off under a Labor government. All of those promises have been broken. And this government has been focused on the wrong priorities. It started with the Prime Minister's voice referendum. Not only did it waste $450 million, which could have helped families with the cost of living pressures that you're now facing, the referendum also divided our nation. And let's not forget that the Prime Minister called no voters chicken littles and doomsayers. Today, millions of Australians are struggling to pay their bills. Even going to the supermarket and petrol station has become stressful for so many. Prime Minister, Australians are genuinely hurting under your government, and they're not chicken littles. Electricity bills haven't gone down by $275, as was pledged on 97 occasions. They've skyrocketed. The Treasurer will give you a $300 rebate, but he knows full well that your annual electricity bills have increased, in some cases by up to $1,000, since Labor formed government. Interest rates have gone up on 12 occasions under Labor, and a typical Australian household with a mortgage is $35,000 worse off. And that's if you're lucky enough to own a home. Under this Prime Minister, the great Australian dream of home ownership has turned into a nightmare. Even finding somewhere to rent is near impossible. Now, the government has brought in an additional 923,000 migrants in just 2 years. On the available data, the government has only contributed 265,000 new homes and units to accommodate those people. Australians are struggling to find homes to rent and buy, and it's not always due to a lack of money. Amidst this housing crisis, Labor is bringing in 1.67 million migrants over 5 years, more than the population of Adelaide in 5 years. We celebrate the contributions of migrants over many decades. We're a great country because of what they've helped to build, and the great Australian achievement of modern Australia is something that we celebrate every day. But by getting the migration policy settings right, the Coalition can free up more houses for Australians. Now, the Prime Minister has promised to build 1.2 million homes by 2029, but on the government's current trajectory, they will fall short by 400,000 homes, or 33%. The Prime Minister is making the housing crisis much, much worse. And Australians need homes now. We're at an 11-year low of building approvals. To help Australians into homes, we need to make sure that we prioritise them for existing homes, the homes that have already been built. The other impact Australians are feeling from the Albanese government's poor management of the migration program is from congestion on our roads and pressure on our existing services, which are stretched, like trying to get in to see a GP. Tonight, I announce several measures a coalition government will implement to meet our housing crisis head-on by alleviating pressure on the housing market. We believe that by rebalancing the migration program and taking decisive action on the housing crisis, the coalition can free up almost 40,000 additional homes in the first year and well over 100,000 homes in the first 5 years.
And he promised that a coalition government would drastically slash migration as its main way of freeing up more than 100,000 homes over 5 years. A Dutton government would reduce Australia's permanent migration program by a quarter, from 185,000 to 140,000 for the first 2 years, in recognition of the urgency of this crisis, Dutton said. The program would then increase to 150,000 in the third year and 160,000 in the fourth. In making the cut, the coalition would ensure that there were enough visas for those with building and construction skills to support house building. The refugee and humanitarian program would be cut back to 13,850 from the present 20,000, and he said that excessive foreign student numbers would also be reduced. Dutton also suggested that a hard cap on international students needs to be in place to cut international student numbers, and Dutton said he would work with the university to set a cap, calling the current number of students excessive. And he singled out Sydney University on the 730 report, labelling its percentage of international students untenable. They made $1.4 billion last year out of international students. 47% of their students on campus are international students, and it's untenable, Dutton said. Also, a coalition government would impose a ban for 2 years on foreign investors and temporary residents buying existing homes, not new, existing. Now, this may be sensible, but then, of course, the question is, why not make it permanent? And by the way, the official numbers suggest that around 5,000 homes were purchased via this mechanism last year, but we think that many more were falling through the regulatory cracks.
As each day passes, this government increasingly shows how disconnected it is from the views, the values and the vision of everyday Australians. Labor has forgotten the main principle of governing. It isn't the people who serve the will of the government. It is the government who serves the will of the people. Yeah. I came to this parliament having served my community as a police officer and as a successful small business owner employing 40 people. I've had the honour of serving Australians on the front bench since 2004 in many portfolios under four Prime Ministers. My team and I have the experience to get our country back on track and to support everyday Australians. We live in the greatest country in the world. Yeah. But at the moment, Australia and Australians are being held back. Australians are being left behind, and they feel it. They're being left behind by this weak Labor government who has the wrong priorities. And our country deserves so much more. Ask yourself this question. Are you better off today than you were 2 years ago? No. Do you feel safer or more secure than you did 2 years ago?
No.
When governments change, the country changes. Australians can't afford another 3 years of the Albanese Labor government. At the next election, it will be a time for change. A better change for you, for your family and for our country. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Sutton concluded, "We believe that by rebalancing the migration programme and taking decisive action on the housing crisis, the coalition could free up more than 100,000 additional homes over the next 5 years." Jim Chalmers described the opposition leader's budget reply proposing migration cuts as an unhinged and risky rant. But again, it's a battle of announceables, with numbers being bandied about. But my take on this is that neither side of politics are really wanting to take this on seriously, despite the direct link to higher inflation. In both cases, this is more of a policy announcement set to try and win an election rather than nation-building policy reform, which is indeed needed for both migration and the gas market. The net result will be higher inflation for longer, requiring higher interest rates than would otherwise be needed. I'm afraid that both sides of politics are failing the test. Their migration strategy is not a strategy at all. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.